that body is yet forever in the beast.
Phases of thinking which are so necessary to it. The emotions lose the nutrition which breeds love and friendship. The body loses the energy to recuperate from pressures. And on all these levels, we have tried to substitute artificial factors for the natural ones. And whenever some essential function fails, we try to remedy it through medication, psychoanalysis, or something of that nature. Now, when you get this 4.5 billion, plus the sickened bodies of all the other kingdoms that have been made sick by us, and pour all this corruption into the energy and magnetic field, it is assumed that by the circulation of the solar energy, that this can be all purified, just as we would have it in the case of the earth. But the sun was not given to us primarily to be the head of a sewerage system. There are certain inevitable natural wastes which the sun can control. There are certain psychological wastes which are suitable to be controlled by the lunar ray. But there are many forms of artificial corruption pouring out into space all the time from this busy, dizzy little planet, which will make it very difficult to permit the proper distribution of the nutrition chain, so far as we are concerned. As this process goes further and further, and we dig more and more deeply into the earth, depleting its resources, we don't realize what some of the ancients knew, namely, that man is connected to the solar system by planetary polarities and metallic elemental polarities in the earth. In other words, in order for the rays from its outer space to reach us constructively, there has to be a polarization of those rays in the planet itself. And for these rays from the planet to reach us, there must be a personal polarity in each of us to receive all of these energies. And these polarities are magnetic attractors. They are factors by means of which the ray reaches us because there is something of itself in us. And in the earth, there are all the metals, all the elements, all these various colors, sounds, and everything, by means of which these rays from other areas of space have their polarities here and can contribute to our well-being. These rays have to work in the human body. They also have to work in the earth. The Egyptians symbolized the planet Earth by the cross-section of an onion, and they pointed to these concentric rings and pointed out that there was a solar system inside of the Earth, just as there is a solar system of which the Earth is a member. This solar system within the Earth, it has its planetary equivalence in the elements and polarities by which we are united, not only with the solar system, but with the cosmic system. So if we begin to destroy these polarities, if we corrupt them, if we maliciously mutilate the planet, if we do everything that we can to turn it into a garbage heap, we are gradually going to come to a conclusion that we're not going to like very well. We're going to find out that our own thoughtlessness, selfishness, and self-centeredness are doing us a very serious injustice. I remember when in Japan the last time, I went to the great Meiji Shrine in Tokyo. The Meiji Shrine is an enormous park open to the public. It is the place where most picnics and many weddings are given. It is a beautiful grounds and dedicated to the memory of the Emperor Meiji and his Empress, the two who brought Japan out of medievalism into the modern world. If you walk along there, you will notice that while there are thousands of people picnicking and enjoying it and children playing and everything you can think of, you will never see a scrap of paper, an empty can, one single bit of rubbish in that park. I saw a man walking in that park with a camera. He changed his film and put the film back in his pocket, the empty park. But in putting it back, part of the inner lining fell onto the walkway. He didn't see it. He walked a few feet when a Japanese gentleman came up to him, bowed to him, and handed him the piece of paper. Nothing. one of the beginnings of recognition of integrities is to preserve and protect the beauty of the world in which you live. That beauty is not just something that's pretty. That beauty moving inside of you becomes a powerful factor in your own integration. Where the loss of beauty is noted in the outside of our environment, something is lost within ourselves also. So if this world, so to say, is a great shrine, which really it is, and it is sacred. This world is sacred. It is sacred to the laws and principles, whether we are theological or not, which are immutable and inevitable and must be obeyed. So, if we learn to keep the world beautiful, we gain a great deal. If we learn, for instance, that the rights of nations, just because they are small, cannot be violated with impunity. If we realize that all success based upon the bodies of the dead is no success at all and never can be. Little by little, we can organize the world in which we live, and we can clean the Aegean stable of our own planetary aura. We can give the magnetic field of the earth a house cleaning. And we can do it by each person giving himself a house cleaning mentally first. So that all this corruption does not go out into the larger atmosphere of things. The corrupt individual may turn around and accidentally or intentionally murder his neighbor. The corrupt nation may destroy the sovereign rights of other people. And a corrupted earth can fall apart. Now, I believe we're going to find that this has a distinct bearing upon house cleanings of various kinds. Of course, the greatest house cleaning on the planet that we have record of was the bubonic plague, which destroyed a large part of Europe. It is not known, of course, exactly how many perished in the plague, but the population of the earth itself was very much smaller in the 14th, 15th, and 16th centuries. And the plague ran for over 300 years with recurrent attacks. It is estimated conservatively that the bubonic plague took about 55 million lives. It is the greatest natural disaster of all time. And what was the cause of it? Well, Nostradamus came about with a very good answer. Of course, nobody listened to him. They didn't care what he thought. The plague was either an accident of providence or the will of God for those who did not go to church regularly. Nostradamus said, no. You got outside of this town, which has been visited every time there's been a plague, has had a visitation, a stagnant pool. You have dirt. You have poor sewerage. You have all these things. You do not have any sense of keeping your own environment clean. There is where your trouble lies. They paid no attention to him. Finally, it was discovered that the plague was carried by rats, infected rats. And we are told that the bubonic plague could still come back if we were not careful and watchful in shipments from other countries. But we are careful and we are watchful. Also, when we go along, we find that perhaps one of the most dissipated areas in Europe at the time, about the time of the Christian era and slightly after, was Pompeii and Herculaneum. These were the summer resorts of the wealthy Romans. These were the places where the elite gathered to dissipate. It was a cruel, wealthy, fashionable area, burdened with most vices known to man, including the most terrible games in the amphitheaters involving human life, where nobody cared about anything, that most of the people were there, drank themselves under the table at all the banquets, and life was just one big grand vacation with a good time by all. And then the great Vesuvius erupted. And in a few hours, it was all gone. Pompeii was covered with ashes to a depth of many feet, whereas Herculaneum was in the lava range and was partly buried by lava. Nothing remained of these play towns. No, it was not the only ones. There was a Calabria earthquake in Italy in which a complete city disappeared and the ground closed over it. And travelers a few miles away saw the city and then saw a great cloud rise in the air, and when it settled, there was simply no city, not even a ruin. The earth completely closed over it. Now, it's hard to understand why these things happen, but it is true. And by watching your records, that nearly always there is an earthquake and plague and climatic maxima wherever there is a mass of human folly. That the more cruel man is, the more likely it is for him to have these troubles. Now, just for example, I picked out a few. I didn't want to take chances on remembering them. Of things that have happened in the present century, no earlier, that I think are very important and should be given a little consideration, maybe more than that is given now. You all remember the great Chinese leap into tomorrow, as was inspired by Mao. We also know the whole story of the Long March, by means of which Mao came into power. Now, we do not wish to belittle what Mao has accomplished for the people that might be good. But what he did to many people was a pretty tragic thing. Millions died in that Reformation, so-called. The Reformation itself completely failed. And what was begun in 1975 and 76 was practically all lost. In China, in Tianjin, in 1976, is the second greatest earthquake catastrophe known. It came right in the midst of this big leap into the future. It took in China 700,000 lives. It was one of the most important or terrible of all earthquakes. The earthquakes in India and Assam were very interesting also. They came in the midst of the reconstruction of Indian philosophy at a very critical time, in 1950. At that time, there were only 1,500 deaths, which is rather a minor earthquake. But devastated areas extended over 30,000 square miles. The only reason it was a small earthquake is because there were no inhabitants there. In the 1920s, when China was emerging in the formation of its present government, there was the Kansu earthquake in 1920 that took 180,000 lives. Nearly all of these earthquakes follow or are associated with war. And they are much increasing now in areas where all this disturbance is occurring. We might note that in 1978 in Iran, there was a serious earthquake that took 25,000 lives, and since that, there's been another one. The revolution and the earthquake seem to be closely related. All the mysterious sorrows and tragedies of Latin America may be understood in terms of earthquakes. In 1960, for example, there was a series of earthquakes within a day or two of each other that struck Chile, Japan, and Hawaii, with a property damage of $650 million. Now, of course, that time and the ones that have followed are accompanying the tremendous outbreak of violence throughout the Latin American countries. The moment we break the peace, we either have plagues or crop failures or earthquakes. And maybe that's because we have entirely lost all of the terror for father. We are not doing any of the things that hold a world together. Inconsistency breaks a home. The broken home is a source of misery for generations. World inconsistency breaks the surface of the earth in desolation and carnage. And this goes on and has results for ages to come. We are still fighting the consequences of the wars of Caesar and Alexander. And for a long time to come, we will fight the wars of Napoleon and Hitler. The tremendous consequences of these things. The whole theory is wrong. And nature will never support wrong. It won't support it in our personal lives. It won't support it in our national existence. It won't support it in world economy. We are a very fortunate people in many senses of the word. This planet is an exceedingly pleasant place by nature. It has its troubles. Everything does. There is no perfection in this world, or we wouldn't deserve to live here. And there are very few people who expect perfection. But we have here the raw materials for the building of the greatest and most constructive commonwealth the world has ever known. We have the potential here to have everything that is necessary for decency, for security, for the development of arts and sciences, for the extensions of creativity in every field of life. We have all that it takes to build a good world. We were made gardeners in the Garden of Eden, so said. We lived here, so according to the ancient rites, until we made mistakes ourselves and got expelled. But we didn't learn anything. We continued to realize or think that mistakes were inevitable, that corruption is something you have to accept, that nobody needs to be much concerned over the welfare of other people. Well, many ways we can't change this. We cannot prevent all these things from happening. But there are two things we can do. One is to make the adjustment within ourselves which will clear our own magnetic field. The fact that many people are wrong doesn't make our wrong right. And if the individual cleanses his own inner life, the inside of his own cup, he will find that his adjustment with society will be greatly improved. No one is going to really worry much because he lives a little better. But they will worry a great deal if he talks about being better and continues to be worse. It is therefore quite possible for us to so build our personal lives that we can earn the integrities and securities that were given to us in the beginning. We are told that no matter how many fall to the right or the left, the just man shall not be moved. The just person is protected by his own justice because he keeps the rules. By doing this, he cleanses his own private stable. He cleanses his own inner life and can be able to live a normal and reasonable existence and be ready for greater advancements and greater opportunities in lives to come. He's going to be all right. And the second thing he can do without really endangering anybody is to try in his own outer conduct to keep the rules of decency, the rules of nature, to live as far as he can harmlessly. No one can be completely harmless, but we can reduce our harmfulness to such an extreme minimum that it will save us most of the miseries with which we are now afflicted. All the way along, we have to do these things. We also have to be as careful as we can be in the handling of the materials by means of which the earth itself is polluted. We have to try to protect the hygiene, and we have to practice highly civilized eugenical procedures. We have to keep everything as near as possible in a simple but reasonable condition. We have to try not to destroy the healthfulness of an environment, to litter the parks, to throw bottles out of car windows, and to do all kinds of foolish things. And we must not commit the greatest follies probably of the moment, and that is to try to drive an automobile while under the influence of alcohol. All of these things are contrary to laws, and not only man-made. For man-made laws are often ineffective and quite frequently incomplete. But laws of common sense to prevent the perpetuation of tragedies which will continue. As more and more people become aware of these facts, a new element will come into the magnetic field. When a person suddenly discovers some of the spiritual values of life, some of the integrities, and begins to experience the beauty of inner normalcy and maturity, the magnetic field is influenced. Every gland, every cell, every molecule, every atom feels the marvelous force of improved consciousness. And that is, in a sense, how for the little cells in our body, our own enlightenment makes a world teacher of us as far as they are concerned. We will have the power to guide the parts of our own body into a greater conformity with truth itself. All over the world today, the difficulties that we are passing through are beginning to provide incentives for a better approach to things. All over, groups are rising up, not able politically necessarily to control situations, but to produce better people, to more consecrated forms of conduct, to deeper understanding of the laws governing life. As this process continues, there is every reason to believe that it will largely neutralize the negative karma that is in the Earth's magnetic field. It will begin to allow the constructive forces of nature to operate. It will not bring about, as has been true in the past, the constant death of the great world light. To the ancients, the sun was the symbol of the Messiah, the power of life, the power of truth, the symbol of hope. And we must not only realize that this power nourishes us and sustains us, but that every one of us has a responsibility for it. That we have a responsibility to use every energy that we have as wisely as we can. If we do these things wisely, in a sense, we redeem the earth. We redeem the earth when we redeem ourselves, inasmuch as the earth itself has not the type of disposition and problem that we have. But it has the problem. It must bring its own children to maturity. It is the earth itself that must finally provide the material for the salvation of the human soul. Therefore, the earth must be kept clean and pure, and every effort must be made to make sure that it is not corrupted by personal or collective activity. I checked the number of earthquakes over and did a number of charts of them at one time. Some of them are in our journal. And it becomes obvious constantly that it is not simply planetary positions that are involved in these things. In the last 4 or 5 years, there have been a dozen doleful predictions of earthquakes. Up to now, they have been comparatively moderate, not much more than usual for the planet. But the constant belief that the earthquakes are, for instance, the result of the heavy weight of planets on one part of the earth or another, so that in the atmosphere a gathering of planets may unbalance the magnetic field of the solar system. I don't really buy this too heavily. I feel this way, that if there is a heavy burden of planets, if it is true that there are definite alignments, these are potential causes of something. But these potential causes will not produce their effects unless they operate upon an appropriate medium. If psychologically, mentally, emotionally, physically, geographically, economically, in all these ways, we are all tragically poised on the edge of disaster, it is quite possible that a couple of rays from Jupiter or Saturn might finish off the trick. But if we are not deserving some form of catastrophe, we won't have it. And the catastrophe will be limited to what is necessary to bring to the average human being a greater realization of his own reason for life. Catastrophes carry persons out of incarnation, but catastrophes have never killed a human soul. They have never destroyed. They have merely taken away bodies which, for the most part, have been abused, misused, and neglected. But if the individual learns through the problem of a tragic disaster and can carry forward into future embodiments the information he has gained, all will be well. If the earth, in its present cycle, can achieve the normalization of the children upon it, so that in a sense there is a cosmic world government, a world government ruled primarily by the spirit of the planet itself and the cooperation of the other members of the solar system. If this is attained, in due course of time, the earth spirit will pass to other forms, but it will go on higher and higher through the victories that have been achieved in its own evolutionary program. So everything works together in the long run for good. There is nothing lost. There is no tragic disaster. The nearest thing there is to a disaster in this world is stupidity. It is the fact that people just will not and cannot argue themselves or convert themselves to constructive ways of life. They cannot get over their gossiping. They cannot get over their intrigues, their vanities, their ambitions, their jealousies, and fanaticisms. And if those keep on, the death rate will gradually rise, as it did in antiquity, as there is more and more corruption and less corrective factors available. The end of the whole problem is that man must purify the world. And by purifying the world, he accomplishes this by purifying himself. And when the world has reached a point where it deserves world peace, it will have it. Where it deserves to be free from natural calamities, it will be free. And if the time comes when there is an earthly paradise, it will certainly be the result of human beings earning it by the production of constructive endeavors. The idea that heaven or paradise or anything else that's good will be handed to us simply because we want it is like trying to tell small children that regardless of their conduct, we will take care of them and reward them as well for their misdeeds as their good ones. We cannot do these things and survive in the pattern of natural law. But when in the course of time we keep the law, magnetic field within ourselves will be very easy to get along with. We will find in it new sensory perceptions that we have not yet discovered. We will find wisdom that we have never even guessed at. And we will come closer and closer to the divine mechanism by means of which the whole life of man and the universe are maintained. Until, however, we ourselves take over the redemption of ourselves, we cannot hope that some vicarious power will take care of it for us. Even if there was such a power, which most people rather doubt, it would be too bad to believe in it, because it would destroy in us the glory of being right in our own right, of doing the thing correctly ourselves because it is the correct thing to do. Actually, looking back over a whole cycle of these earthquakes, it becomes more or less certain that man is more tied up in them than he realizes. Perhaps it isn't all involved in himself. Perhaps there are larger solar factors. But he is certainly doing things that aren't helping. A nuclear warfare certainly is not doing him any good. It is a complete perversion of natural resource. If the powers that are locked within an atom are sufficient to destroy the population of a planet, rightfully used, those powers can lift that planet to a higher level than it has ever known. The proper use of energies protects the integrities of living things. That human beings should conceive of the power of the atom should also remind them of the tremendous power for good that is locked in every cell of our own bodies. That within us there are millions and millions of potential gods growing up within our own flesh. It is our moral duty to take care of them, guard them, serve them, take the proper parental attitude toward them. Because if we neglect them long enough, they'll create an earthquake in us that we won't like. Not because they want to hurt us, but because they are no longer capable of fulfilling their destiny. And that which cannot complete the purpose for itself is removed. It is given another chance, but if it cannot get out of a present emergency, it must wait for a better opportunity. But each person has a responsibility to his own body. He has a responsibility to body politic. He has a responsibility to the solar system, to the cosmos, to the universe, to the galaxy. It is all part of one chain of life. And it is absolutely necessary that no form of life, no matter how humble, breaks that chain or tries to. That chain must be preserved. For there is not only a great deal high material above the present state, but there is an infinite diversity of that which is below the present level. There are more forms of life that are still below us in evolution than there are above us, perhaps. When we happen to realize that the population of the earth is completely overwhelmed by the number of one single insect that exists. This problem of the broken chain not only damages us, but contributes to the detriment of every form of life below our own. The minerals, the plants, the vegetables, the animals, the molecular, all these things are damaged when we break the chain of integrities. And wherever the breaking of the chain takes place, there is a shuddering in space. There is an emergency. There is a condition which requires drastic treatment. And if this drastic treatment, it takes the form of earthquakes or other natural catastrophes, they can all be traced to some type of mistake that man himself makes and perpetuates in his society. Long ago, there was a very serious flood in China. And the emperor of China wanted to know how to solve it. So he sent for a great architect. And the architect said, "Your Majesty, the people along the shores of the Yellow River try to protect themselves against floods by building dikes and filling earth bags and making embankments and filling sacks with sand and doing all kinds of things like that to build a wall against the water. It has always failed, and it always will. There is only one answer to your problem. Don't make the wall higher. Dig the bed of the river deeper so that the walls of the natural wall of the river will protect the communities. And within our lives, there's no use building more and more defenses against the problems we face. Instead of building excuses and trying in one way or another to exonerate ourselves from our own natural infirmities, let us not build more defenses against problems, but let's build the bed of the river deeper. Let our own wisdom, our own integrity, enable us to use nature's own way to protect life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. If we will do these things, we will in due time bring about the goals we seek." And today there is a new movement in that direction. There is a great searching and gradually increasing integrities will bring about the restoration of all things. We need this restoration, and until we get it, nature will give us nudges every little while. It will keep on telling us that we're not doing what we should be doing. And as long as we fail, we will be subject to the emergencies, not of an avaricious or a vengeful deity, but the emergencies of a law violated through ignorance or selfishness. So if we work all these things together, I think it'll probably come all right in due time. I guess that's all for this morning. With all the beauty of the Near Eastern wisdom, can only tell